Today is Paige Park. Hi.
Hello. It's good to be here.
Thank you for joining me and my listeners today and being willing to share your experience and stories and all the things you've learned from that. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here and just to be able to share all that I've learned with you and your listeners.
Perfect. So I'll start with the question that I like to ask. How did you come to see the world the way you do today?
Well, it started about 9 years ago. There have been a lot of things since then, but the real revelations started about 9 years ago after my divorce was final. And then 5 months after my divorce was final, my mom was diagnosed with a glioblastoma multiforme, which is a brain tumor that has fingers that reach into the brain tissue. From the date of her surgery, which was October 10th, to the date of her passing, which was July 10th, 9 months exactly, it was kind of a rocky, not kind of, it was a really rocky road. And one of the things that happened during that was my brothers and I had multiple conversations about how we were getting older, parents were getting older, mom and dad weren't able to do some of the things that they wanted to do because my dad had been diagnosed with Parkinson's shortly after he retired. So mom was his caregiver during all of this. So we were taking care of mom and taking care of dad. He passed away 2 years after she did. And then my oldest brother then passed away 2 years after my dad. There was a 10-year spread between my brothers and I. And so throughout this whole time period, as we're taking care of everybody and kind of putting our lives on hold to some degree, to take care of the parents, to take care of the estate, to deal with my brother's things after he passed away, we kept having this conversation about how life is short and you don't know how long you're going to have. And death and grief has a funny way of showing you your own mortality. And so one of the promises I made to myself during that time period was that I would begin to do things that I'd never done before. So things that I'd want to experience, places I've wanted to go, other cultures I've wanted to experience. And so as a result of that, I began to see the world in a bigger, more expansive way and have come to the place in my life that I am now. And in the middle of this, yoga kind of wove its way in as well, because I'm a grief yoga teacher now. And I ended up turning to yoga in a time after my dad passed away, when I was struggling to regulate my nervous system. I was super disconnected from myself and my body, and it brought me back to me. It brought me back to myself. It brought me back to divine connection. It brought me back to community, and explored yoga teacher training as a result of this, not to teach grief yoga, but I'm a classroom teacher by day to connect with my kids and to give them a way to reconnect with themselves. And then it's turned into teaching grief yoga and also teaching and working with kids in this way.
So if I understand you right, one of the biggest gifts from this grieving and so on was that you dared to do things that you hadn't done before and expanded your horizon.
Yes, very much so. My family hosted foreign exchange students as I was a kid growing up, two from Germany. And I had been in contact with my German brother, and he invited me to Christmas at their house the year my father passed away. And I couldn't, staying here was not emotionally available to me. And so the day after school got out, I hopped on a plane and flew to Germany for the first time in my life, stayed with my brother, spent time, my German sister lives very close to him, spent time with her, got to experience Christmases with their families, got to meet all of her siblings, got to meet all of their kids, and just really can integrate into that culture. And it was just wonderful because I've had these two have been in my life for so long, and to be able to see the world from their perspective, like from where they live, and to hang out in their house and to meet all of the family just opened things up in a different way for me. And then I've also taken some other trips around the United States and just explored and seen things that I hadn't before.
So you spoke of grief yoga and how you are sharing that with people on top of your classroom experiences. What is the main message that you get from with grief yoga? Because you said it connected you with your body, it connected with you with yourself that you had felt disconnected with. It reestablished a certain pattern of being able to live a life of your own, right? Even though you were so sad and things like that. So how are you helping people with that?
It gave me a place to actually be with my grief. And I didn't realize this until later, until I started planning classes myself. It gave me a space to be with my grief, to live with the grief. And a friend of mine not too horribly long ago sent me a little meme infographic, and it said, "The grief doesn't change, you do." And it showed this grief in a jar, and the jar didn't fit. The grief didn't really fit very well in the jar. And then it shows the jar later, and the grief is the same size, but the jar has grown and expanded around it. And that's what yoga was able to do for me. So I was able to, A, be with my grief, in a way that I hadn't been before. I was able to pay attention to the grief, because when you begin to look at it, when you begin to pay attention to it, when you begin to experience all of the feelings that come with grief, and it could be anything from joy and laughter to sadness and crying, like and everything in between, anger, all of the feelings can be contained in grief. We often just look at the sad ones, but that's not always the case. Sometimes there's even a lost happiness. There can be a joy from those memories, and then there's a new way of life and a new way of doing things. And one of the biggest things for me with yoga is breath, and being able to connect into my breath and knowing that no matter what's going on physically or what's going on in the world around me, that when I pause and when I breathe and when I just focus on that, it brings me back inside. It brings me back into myself. It increases my connection with God, my connection with divine. It just gives me that anchor that allows me to root in and know that this is where I am. This is where I'm supposed to be. And this is what I'm supposed to be doing. If that makes sense.
Well, it sounds like it gives you a sense of at-homeness, and that's really important. So, yeah, in A Course in Miracles, it speaks of the connection never is lost. What is your experience with the connection to those who have physically are no longer available to you? Is that connection there, or what is that like?
Yeah, the connection is definitely still there. It's just different. It's changed. I feel them all of the time. I feel that connection with, I was very, very close to my parents, and I feel that connection with them always. There have been a couple of occasions, however, where I've felt it very, very strongly. Actually, probably three. One was when I was in Germany with my brother. He and I would sit up late and talk about mom and dad and the family. He kind of adopted us when he came to visit the first time. And so that was one of the occasions. The second occasion, after my oldest brother passed away, he was living in the Florida Keys at the time. And my other brother was down there with him, and I flew down. My German niece had been visiting, and we saw her off. And then 2 hours later, I was on a plane to Florida because it was right after my brother had died, like a day or two later. And so I flew down to help him and to be with him because I told him, I said, you don't have to do this alone. This, I can be there with you. I can come help you. It's not a problem. I'll just take off work. I have bereavement days. I can use them. I will come be with you. We'll do this together. We've been through so much together already. I've got you. We can do this together. You don't have to be alone. So I flew down, excuse me. And we took care of the things and the keys, and then he had driven. So we drove back up together. And on the way, Florida is a very long state, and it takes a lot of time to get from the very southern tip of Florida to the panhandle even. And my family, I grew up camping in the panhandle many, 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 many years. And we're heading, I think we were in Miami, and we're on the way up. And he looks at me and he goes, you want to go see mom and dad? Yeah, let's go. And I knew he meant let's stop in Panama City, which is where we used to go camping, and let's go to the campground and walk the beach and be there. And that was one of the other places that I have seen them and really felt their presence. And then the third time, I stayed with my dad's fraternity buddy and his wife, and then stayed in there. They have a house on the beach in Delaware. And so we spent the night there. We stayed up late talking and sharing stories. And they'd known my dad for a very long time. They were in each other's weddings and had gotten together many, many times over the years. And so it was fun to stay up and visit with them. And I felt the presence of my parents very strongly during that time as well. So those are the three that just really stand out. They're always with me. And I find it interesting, you know, we bury people or we cremate them. My mom and dad are buried. And I will occasionally go to the cemetery and just check on their graves, but they're in my heart. They're in my soul. They're in the air around me. They're not in those graves. I just go check on it from time to time, just because I feel like it's the daughterly thing to do, not because I want to go. I know a lot of people who go to the cemetery and visit, but because of that connection, they're not there.
Yeah. What is the takeaway from knowing that you're connected with them? Do you speak with them, or how do you communicate? Because communication doesn't break off, according to A Course in Miracles, and you were saying they're always with you. So how does this two-way communication work for you?
It's more a feeling. Sometimes I'll talk to them, but not very often. It's more a feeling of I have them in my heart, and as I'm making decisions that I might want to talk over with them, I just kind of seek inside and what that is. And I know that their guidance is there with me. Sometimes I talk to them, not very often though. I know some people do, and it's just not something that I've done.
And the feeling of their presence, is that like they're standing around you or hugging you, or what type of presence is that?
It's more I can feel just their spirit. It's not like, it's like a cord connection almost, and less of a physical presence. It's a deeper, more spiritual connection. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but it's that there's just a knowing within me that says they're there. It's not any in the air around me. I don't know that I've ever felt them hug me, but I have felt them kind of their soul, their essence in the room, and not necessarily like anything physical.
So another big question that I have about this grieving process is the issue of forgiveness, because there's always all this guilt and blame and shame and stuff that has gone in during life. And has anything changed with the passing or before the passing so that changed? And you know, forgiveness is very important for our own well-being. How has that process been going for you?
It's interesting that you bring that up. There wasn't anything that I felt anyone needed forgiveness for regarding my parents. I felt like we did the best that we could given the circumstances with what we had and what they needed. I felt like, you know, in the end, their needs were met to the best of our ability. However, my oldest brother and I were estranged when he passed away. And there was a lot that I had to work through on my own, forgiving myself for not being there and forgiving him for the way that he treated me. We struggled to get along for a very long period of time. And I remember arguing with him as a teenager. We would butt heads within 5 minutes of being in the room together or less. He was an avid alcoholic and addict and used most of his life from the time he was very young, 13, 14, I believe. Again, he was 10 years older than I am. So this is also like little girl looking up at older brother perspective. But you can see his grades. I had an old report card of his, and his grades in middle school, I think it was eighth grade, they went from A's and B's to D's and F's in a semester. And so you could see, and I think that's when kind of his personality started to change. So there were some changes within that. His interactions with our mom and dad started to change in that time period. And he ended up not finishing high school, getting kicked out of the house. And then he moved away when I was 8 or 9, maybe 10 the most, when he moved away. I can't remember exactly when he moved. I think I was 10 when he moved to Texas. And I live in Indiana. It's a pretty good distance. And so it finally got to the point after mom and dad had passed away that for my own sanity and my own personal safety, for my own sanity and my own personal safety and my own setting boundaries within myself. I mean, this is how one of the ways I've grown as a person is learned to when I need to set boundaries and how to do it. I ended up using my other brother as a source of communication, because when I talked to him, I would end up screaming into the phone, and it wasn't good for either one of us. And so if we needed to communicate with each other, I told my brother and he passed the message on, and then back and forth. And I had talked to, as we were driving back up from Florida, I had talked to my brother about, you know, I wish I had been there. And I had company in town. My niece was in from Germany. And so I needed to be with her, and it wasn't really feasible for me to take her to Florida with me and then have her leave from Florida, because it was so close to when she was flying back home. And so it really, there were a couple of reasons it wasn't feasible. And he also was like, but it took me a while for this to sink in. He said, Paige, even if you had been there, even if you had made amends with him, you would have been 5 minutes later, you would have been arguing again because of the way he was and the way he acted. And so accepting that as a part of who he was and how he interacted with people, and then forgiving myself for not being there when I thought maybe he could use his sister.
Yeah, forgiveness is a big topic in A Course in Miracles. And in A Course in Miracles, forgiveness is not forgiving someone for something that they did that was wrong, but realizing that they are perfect already and letting go of these judgments that we have of them. So it's a different idea of forgiveness than one usually has. Like you say, oh, I'm the bigger person, I forgive them and let them go even though they did something. No, they didn't do anything, you didn't do anything, and everyone is equally innocent and whole and holy, according to A Course in Miracles. So it's a letting go of this idea that we could be less than perfect in the spiritual sense of it, right?
Yeah, that's really beautiful to know that. And I have my attitude toward that has also shifted, because he just was the way he was. And that's okay. It's beautiful. We need all kinds of people in this world. And his attitude and the way he interacted with the world was because of the way he saw the world, not because of anything anyone did.
Yeah, that concurs with what A Course in Miracles says. You can't change the world, but you can change your mind about the world.
Yeah, we lived together for a little while, and I actually attended with a friend, and I got a benefit out of it that I didn't realize that I would get. So after my mom passed away, I moved into my parents' house, my childhood home, which is where my brother lived as well, to help kind of get things in order and ready, because we knew it was going to happen. And mom and dad had lived there for 40 some years, long time. And my dad was kind of a pack rat, collected, didn't let go of a lot of things. He liked to hang on to stuff. So there was a lot to go through. And I went to yoga for 12-step recovery for a little while. And it was so interesting that it gave me a different perspective on how he saw the world and how he interacted with it. And it became easier for me to interact with him when I realized his perspective was so different from mine.
Yeah, so understanding also was a great factor for you to feel more well or better about the things that had happened and the way it had transpired. So that's actually, you changed your mind about your brother as well, in other words.
I did. Very much so changed my mind about my brother. And there's still sometimes, you know, we get those little triggers and things that come up, but learning to, you know, as I've grown as a person and as I've learned to look at things in a different perspective and with a gentler perspective and seeing the beauty and the divine in everything, the more that has expanded for me and opened up for me.
Well, let's look at another aspect of it. You said you're a classroom teacher for your day job. And in our pre-conversation, we talked about how important it was to use all these gains that you got from your experiences with your kids in the classroom. And I would like to hear some of those examples of how that transpires and how that has informed your work as a teacher.
Well, it's actually grown me as a teacher a lot. I've kind of joked this year, several of the kids, I'm a mild disabilities special education teacher, so I get kids who fit into general education curriculum, are capable of learning it, but have some sort of a barrier issue to that. And so my job is to help them work with their barrier issue and find ways to cope with it or to work around it or to see things from a different perspective. And I have, over the last few years, I've been getting a lot of kids who are diagnosed with what we would call in the United States an emotional disability, but a lot of my kids have a history of trauma. And that's where this emotional outburst or this emotional regulation, this emotional struggle is coming from, is they've had some sort of, some of them, it's been a one-off experience, and some of them, their lives growing up is, you know, mom has four different baby daddies and dads are in and out of the kids' lives, maybe not necessarily consistent. You know, mom breaks up with one boyfriend and then has another boyfriend right away who like moves into the house or comes into the kids' lives, and not necessarily stable forces. And, you know, we don't always, our water gets turned off, or we don't always have food. We don't have this, we don't have that. I have to care for my younger siblings because mom's working. These, all of these things add up. Some of my students have had one-off experiences where there was maybe a sexual trauma or an abuse of some sort. And I seem to now be getting so many that have, if there's a kid that comes in with some sort of a trauma, they generally end up getting put on my caseload, which has been really interesting. And it's okay. Like, I love these kids. And so the grief that I have gone through and the expansion that I've gone through and the learning and the yoga and the learning about myself has given me a way to set boundaries with some of these kids and learn to keep those boundaries, because they really want to break them down and not necessarily hold true to that. It's given me a kindness and a gentleness to be with them, kind of mother hen-ish. A lot of the kids at school call me mom, which I take as a compliment. I'm with my kids also I teach high school. I'm with them for 4 years. So we really get to know each other. And then, you know, sometimes when you're overwhelmed, yoga has given me tools that I can use with the kids to help bring them back to center and talk them off of the proverbial ledge that they might be on. So I'm well versed in different breathing techniques and other things, and I can walk a kid through something. Hey, here, let's do this. I can walk them through a meditation. I can walk them through some breath work. That will help bring them back to center and back to themselves, so that then they can go back to class and be a more functioning person than they were maybe when something had upset them. And then the other thing that happened the end of last school year, so it was in March, one of my students passed away, died tragically in an accident. And this is a family, because I'm with my kids for a long period of time. Also, if siblings come down in, I'm with siblings as well. So I had been with the oldest brother. There were five kids in this family. I had been with oldest brother. He had graduated 3 or 4 years ago. The brother under him had been with me for 6 years. He was supposed to graduate, took off for a little bit, and then came back and finished actually this past year. And had every reason in the world to quit, because his brother, his buddy, died in the middle of all of this and him trying to finish school. So then I had the oldest, the next, the third in line, who was also a senior in high school when he died. Younger brother, who wasn't on my caseload because he wasn't identified, but had kind of adopted me, would come around, wanted to be with his siblings and me as well. And then younger sister, who has now kind of become my sidekick. So she's the baby girl in the family. And she's a sophomore this year. She was a freshman last year. And so I became one of, there were a few of us, but I was one of the safe places that the grieving kids could come to. So these are the kids who might not necessarily seek out counseling, had a few trusted adults in the building that they connected with. They were oftentimes teachers and not administrators or counselors or mental health professionals that we have in our building. And so I ended up just loving on a whole bunch of grieving kids the last 3 months of school, this past school year, simply because of the work that I've done on myself, the work that I've done around holding space for my grief yoga classes, and it ended up translating into holding space, giving these kids just room to be and to grieve, and to be who they needed to be in their grief, and to teach them. One of the most beautiful things that I saw was this tough, life has knocked me down and I've gotten back up so many times, kid that used to get into so many fights and just kind of cause trouble and ruckus in school, just sobbing at the loss of his best friend. Openly, and it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen, when you can openly grieve as a young man, openly grieve the loss of your best friend. It's a healthy thing, and we don't always say that. During this time, there was a teacher that turned one of the kids in that was involved in all of this. They were very concerned because they weren't grieving properly, and turned them into the guidance department, the counselors, and one of them pulled her aside and talked to her. And she came out and I said, "What are you doing in there?" And she said, "Somebody said I wasn't grieving properly." I said, "Honey, you are grieving how you need to grieve, and that's okay." She was angry. Every right was a day or two after her friend passed away, and she's very close to the family. And anger is a part of it. Let's not be afraid of anger, people. It's there. It's a piece of it. And I think so many, especially adults, and a lot of educators I've learned, are afraid of anger, which is a very real emotion. Now let's learn how to use our anger constructively. Let's learn how to not lash out at the people we love when we're expressing our anger, but let's express our anger. It's okay. And she wasn't lashing out. She was just mad.
Wow. Yeah. It's quite deep. So this is this type of ongoing process that you're having with the skills that you've gained through having gone through grief, and you're just expressing the idea that there is no right or wrong way to grieve. The way you grieve is the way that you grieve, and that's good. And I think it's important to understand that we are okay, right? We are okay to be who we are and to experience things the way we do. And that gives us the opportunity to be able to change our minds about things like you did.
Yeah, I love to say it's okay to not be okay. And it is. And there are times when we're not. And we don't have to be on and perfect and happy and all of the time. That's a part of life. And as we learn to feel things and experience that more deeply, we start living more fully as a result of it, because we're experiencing the high highs and the low lows and all of the beauty in between. Because there are times when we're not going to be okay, and it's okay to not have to put on a happy face to pretend that I'm okay when I'm really not okay. And grief is one of those things that, as things happen, you experience it again and again and again. And it's a little different every time it comes up. The death of my student reminded me of the death of my parents and my brother. And that was okay. And I had a moment in there where I also grieved them again. And then especially the death of one so young, he was not quite, it was 2 weeks before his 18th birthday. So he was 17 when he died. And the, you know, he had graduation. There was an open house for his brother that it was cute because he did a sign for both of the, it was both of theirs graduation party. So it was just the one. And, but there were moments, you know, in graduation. So as those events came up, the grief came back as well. And that happens, that grief pops up when, you know, when there's things. And I know for this family, when, you know, a sibling gets married or the birthday comes around again, or there's a holiday, that things, that grief is going to pop back up again. And I know for me, like, holidays have been hard. I have one family member basically left. There's a couple of nieces, but they're not really in the area. And so I've had to find different ways to create celebration around the different different events that happen throughout the year and throughout our lives, to include the family members who have passed, and create new traditions within that as well.
So I'm going to open the floor for comments or questions or sharings. Does anyone have a comment or a question or something to share?
Hi, Paige. Thank you for sharing your story. It's just, it's interesting to hear, you know, about your teaching and everything. And I have two questions. The first is, you've been through so much, you know, all these losses, all, you know, this upheaval in your life. You kind of referenced, you know, like yelling and screaming at your brother. Like, how have you, like, been able to, how did you cope during that crisis? Like, what did you do to get through it?
Well, at first I didn't cope. I stuffed my feelings. It was later when I came back to yoga where I learned to be with myself and be with my breath. And when I'm feeling or experiencing something, then I would stop. I would breathe. I would just let that feeling or emotion or whatever happened to be coming up wash over me, experience it in all of the facets that it had. And then I found that as I did that, it would release. With my brother, when he was still alive, I found that sometimes I just had to leave the room and get away from him, or not be around him. It was just easier that way, until I learned how to handle and deal with my emotions. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, actually it does. The answer is that you learned how to manage your strong reactions in a healthy way. We all have strong emotions, and we often make mistakes when we're in a state of high emotion, right? Okay, good. Okay, but during the crisis, that was what kind of pushed you, and you have to figure this out because you were in crisis, right? My second part is, I'm interested in how exactly you use yoga with your students. Do you, like, try to do a group yoga session with them, or is it all more individual kind of coaching?
If you're referring to my students at school, it's individual. It's on a one-on-one basis as things come up. Sometimes if I have a couple of classes that I do teach, and I will model, if I'm feeling frustrated or upset, I'll be like, okay, you guys, I need just a minute. This isn't going quite right. I need to take a few breaths. If you want to take a few breaths with me, you can. And so I'll kind of model that for them and invite them to join me. But I've found it works a little bit better one-on-one. If you want to know how I do my grief yoga classes, which is different, I'm happy to explain that as well.
Okay, yeah, thank you. I work with children, and I used to be a school social worker, and I remember trying to get these people, you know, these kids to do yoga, and they would just fight me on it, you know. But like, you're right, I would like come in the back door individually, you know, by doing that. I just wondered if you had found some kind of way to get through into like to, you know, because the group experience of yoga is very healing too. You know, but yeah, so thank you. And I would love to hear more about how you do your class too. Thank you.
Yeah, I do want to speak to one thing real quick that you were saying about the group yoga and the, just the healing that can be found within that. There's this interconnectedness and this healing with a group class. I was trying to get my school to offer, because they teach high school, so yoga as a PE or yoga as PE, which is an elective credit. But because of the position that I hold, they weren't really going for it. But I do know there's a teacher, at least one teacher here locally, one of my teachers, who also does yoga as PE at a local high school, and has, I think she had like 30 kids signed up for her class this year, which is really cool. So yes, I would love to be able to offer that in the future and just give them the choice as to whether or not they want to join. I've found that giving them an opt-in and an opt-out is they're much more likely to eventually opt in. A couple of years ago, I did a class meditation with a teacher friend who teaches math, and she had this first period class. It was a really small group, and we kind of wanted to see the impact of meditation for these kids. So we just did a little experiment, and I would come in and lead like a 5-minute just body awareness meditation every morning. And it was so powerful. The kids got so much out of it. And it was funny because we don't know who opted in and who didn't, because we said, just if you just sit quietly so that anyone who wants to participate can, and if you don't want to participate, you don't have to. But even just sitting quietly and listening had an effect on them, and they were able to change their course, some of them, as a result of this 5-minute meditation that I did for a semester. The grief classes have, what I do is I have set up, and this is kind of new. I was just doing a drop-in class, and I thought, why am I doing this like everybody else? I'm a solo operation. I'm not wanting to have a yoga studio. I just want to offer my services. I want to help support people in grief. So now what I've done is I have 6-week series with breaks. So there's 2 or 3 weeks of break between each 6-week series. And each 6 weeks is themed around something different. Right now we're looking at paths of yoga and connecting the paths of yoga to grief. So last week we studied the path of knowledge and how knowledge of self can help us process and learn about our grief and lean into our grief. And then this week we're talking about the path of devotion and how devotion and connection to God, yoga can help us reconnect if we've lost connection, or deepen the connection if we have maintained it. Because sometimes, and I know this was true for me when my mom, actually after my dad passed away, I had a crisis of faith, and it took me a little while to come back to that. And so if they have had a crisis of faith, how to get back to it, and if it deepens faith, because that's kind of the other option that happens oftentimes in grief, not always, is that it either deepens or there's a disconnect. And so using either the deepening or the disconnect, and how to deepen after a disconnect. I feel like I'm talking in circles, so I'm gonna stop.
So go ahead, unmute Lynn if you want to say something.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for sharing your story. I have to apologize because I was having trouble hearing for most of the time I was on, but now I have my Bluetooth on, so I didn't catch the last question. So I apologize if I asked something that you already talked about, but I'm just wondering if you had experienced guilt around the passing, and if so, if you have any specific practices that might have been helpful for you in releasing guilt around the passing?
No, I did touch on this a little bit earlier, but that's okay. I can repeat. Not with my parents, a little bit with my brother. We were estranged when he passed away. And so there was a little bit of guilt about that estrangement. And for me, I had to work through the reason for the estrangement, and that even if we had made amends, it probably wouldn't have lasted very long anyway. And so coming to that realization because of the way we saw and interacted with each other. And so coming to that realization kind of helped that guilt, that it's okay because we were so different and we didn't interact very well together most often. And that, you know, even if we had come back together and I had been there, it wouldn't have taken much for him to, he was really good at pushing my buttons. It wouldn't have taken much for us to get back into a disagreement. So just knowing that that was okay the way it was, and just to let it be.
Okay, thank you. It sounds like you use reason and rationalization, but you don't really have any practices around yoga that you could share. I also have a background in yoga, having taught many different levels, but I really haven't encountered anything dealing with yoga for grief therapy or specifically for guilt, other than like the breathing practices and the general practices that you were talking about.
Yeah, now if I was faced with that, this was before my yoga practice really deepened. Now I would probably just use breath and connect to breath and feel, and maybe even journal a little bit or investigate kind of why that's there and talk to it and ask it. I do that sometimes. I'll talk to my feelings, emotions as things come up, kind of ask them what's there, lean into it, what I want to learn from it. I didn't have that practice at the time, and I'd kind of probably rationally worked through that once I started back into my practice and that connection.
Yeah, thank you. Makes sense.
Any further comments or sharings or questions? Okay, then we'll continue. So, so you were actually speaking of things that impacted a huge community. It was not just one person who was impacted by it. This is common knowledge where you are, right? In your area or in your school, right? All these things that you were speaking of. So it impacted a lot of people. So do you have a feeling that your change of mind about things has impacted people as well, or was it just the death?
My change of mind as far as how I view things? Is that what you're asking?
Well, you changed the way you acted because of your insights about it. And this whole community needed support, right, in this process. And you, of course, were part of the grieving, right? It's not like you were out of it, but you were able to grieve in a different way because of the changes you've come to in the way you see things through your own processes.
Yeah, I like to think I impacted the community, at least some of those that were deeply touched by that experience. I know there was an impact with the kids, which is why they sought me out. Because I didn't tell them they had to be or do or act a certain way. I just let them be or act the way they were. And I know they found comfort in that. And if they needed to cry, I let them cry. If they needed to scream, I let them scream. If they needed to just be sad and be with someone, I let them do that too, whatever that happened to be. If they needed to talk or share. And so giving them a space to experience their grief in a healthier way, I hope in turn, then when they are able to share with others, that they pass some of that on, and experience that with those around them instead of just stuffing the feelings and not experiencing it.
Yeah, that's a big thing to, you know, some people don't tend to want to be themselves because they don't think they have any impact. What they're doing doesn't help anyone, right? So they don't want to be authentically who they are in that moment. Is that your experience with people when they're grieving or having other experiences of trauma or whatever, that they are afraid to show it because they think they will harm somebody or are not helpful? And so how did you come to them? Because I think one of your insights was that your experience, no matter what it is helpful, even though it may not appear so in the moment.
Yeah, I would just give them the space to do it. The kids seek me out. I can't hide. They come find me wherever I happen to be because they know, because I created a safe space just by my presence, who I am, the way I am with them. If they say I'm angry, I say you have every, you know, I validate the feeling. Yeah, I can see that you're angry. It's okay to be angry. Yeah, I see that you're sad. It's okay to be sad. This is the time for that. This is a way that you can experience it. This is a way you can experience life. And so, you know, I always try and validate their feelings. Try to be authentic in who I am. And the more authentic I am, the more they gravitate toward me. And they're able to be their authentic selves a little bit more as well, I think, because they know that it's a safe space to open up. Oftentimes in, especially a school environment, they don't always feel safe being themselves because of other people who might make fun of them or tell them that they're wrong, tell them they can't feel that way or they're not feeling that way. And so as we do that, then it creates a more of an unsafe space and they don't feel like they can be themselves. So the more authentic I am and the more I just accept them for who they are and what they are, the more apt they are to come and see me and seek me out, which is kind of a double-edged sword because I also have paperwork and things that I have to do and I don't always have time to get that done.
Yeah, I've heard also there's people who like to use various art forms to work through things. Do you do that as well, or is it mainly through conversation and giving them space and perhaps the breath work that you were speaking of, and then speaking about the paths of yoga and things like that? Yeah, how do you go through that?
I'm a proponent of journaling as well, if you journal, and I also write poetry. So for me, my poetry has been an outlet and a way to work through things. If I'm working with a kid and they want to, and they like to draw, I'll recommend that they draw maybe instead of talk. I now have some puzzles out. I had one that was upset today and was working on the puzzle for a while just to kind of help give her focus for something else instead of what she was, the frustration that she was feeling, not as a way of bypassing, but as a way of being with it. So if there's opportunity, yes. If it's something that that person connects with, yes. But I don't, if it's not something that they've mentioned before, like if they come to, I do have, when I do my yoga classes, I do have a period of about 15 minutes at the end of class that I give them space to journal if that is a practice that they have. So I have a couple of people who come to class who are big journalers, and they will write some things down. But I also tell people if they're not, if that's not something that they do, then it'll just be some time for them to have a little space to themselves. And if I have no one in class who's a journaler, I'll run class the full through that time instead of giving that available time to them if they don't. So it just kind of depends on what the need is. I flex based on who's, when I'm teaching yoga, who's in my class and in school, what kids I'm working with and what they might need. I have some that listen to music as a way of feeling and coping. And so just having that option and availability, what they might happen to need.
Yeah. So yeah, writing things down and making it available to yourself that it's there, right? Yeah. Yeah, these are a lot of different things we've talked about, and we might want to go into some further aspects of it because, you know, we were speaking of things that have happened now in the present or in the past, but in particular lives. How is it when you have stories or things that come from previous generations? What do you do with that?
I've done a little bit of study, not a lot. I've done a little bit of study in intergenerational trauma. The yoga classes that I've taken, my teacher trainings, have all been from a trauma-informed perspective and taking that into consideration as you cue and run classes. And so they have also offered up some intergenerational trauma courses that, and I've taken a course that I was able to participate in. And it was really powerful. One of the things that hit the most home with me when she was talking and taking us through some of these techniques, because she talked about doing a family, I think it's a map. I believe it's a family map. I'd have to look at my notes to double check the term. And that by acknowledging, so for me, I'm adopted, and I don't know anything about my biological family. But as I draw the family map, that if I include my biological family, that gives me the opportunity to begin to get curious about them and about who they were and what they were about. And through meditation, that things about them may become known to me that I might not have known or wouldn't know because I have never met them. I don't know them. And that then by acknowledging that and bringing it in, then it actually helps you become more fully yourself, because you're accepting what might have been hidden, if that makes sense. And she talked about, it was really interesting because she talked about the same thing with maybe a family member who there was something hidden in their, maybe a parent had something hidden in their life. And then as a result of that hidden thing in that parent's life, they sort of passed it on to the kid. But in the kid, it may be coming out in a different way. So maybe it's coming out in a physical symptom or an ADHD or something like that. But it's really something that was hidden within the parent that the kid doesn't even know about, but that it's transferred over. And so by acknowledging, she talked a lot about acknowledging the hidden. So acknowledging things that might be hidden, the stories that were swept under the rug within families. And by doing that, then you're bringing it to light. And by bringing it to light, you're accepting it and making a part of the history and a part of you and a part of who you are. By acknowledging it, then those symptoms, those physical things that might be as a result of it begin to go away over time, the more we acknowledge the things that were hidden.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. And in anthropology, there's a we differentiate between the biological parents and the social parents. Now, social parents are just as equally your history, right? So the family history of your social parents are equally part of this. So do you have, did you get stories transmitted by your social parents that impacted you, and what did you do with those?
I'm still investigating that. This is all very new for me. This is something that I just did a couple of months ago. And so I haven't really gone too deep into it yet. I will say, when I was doing a master's in counseling program several years ago, one of the things that I had to do was a family map, and we traced addiction through my mom's side of the family. So this is my social family. And so much addiction on that side of the family, which I thought was really interesting. And then also my brother. And so, yeah, it was kind of interesting to trace that, but I haven't gone back and really dug into what I've learned too much yet. It's still kind of sitting with me. I think I want to go back and watch some of the videos again and kind of dig in a little bit more with what she was saying. Complete my family map. I didn't fully complete it, and kind of investigate. I'm more interested right now just the adoptive or the biological side of things, because there's so much there that is unknown. And so that has kind of been my focus with this, and not necessarily the social aspect of it.
And that's not the only thing that is intergenerational, not just your family, but history in generally, the narratives that are being told about history, right? And there's a lot of narrative around that, including, all kinds of colonial history, slavery, whatever. There's all these history in humanity that is being, some of it is spoken of, others are not, right? But all this history has an impact in how we see the world. And you're teaching in school, so you probably have a lot to do with things like history and this and other subjects in school. How do you think that the ideas around this are changing for you? Do you have you gained a different perspective through your own experiences? Or do you think history has been something that you accepted the way it came, is being told, and that's it? Or do you get curious to go deeper and find other ways of seeing it?
Yeah, I have definitely gone deeper and looked at other ways of seeing it and not just accepted things for the way they have been presented. I don't necessarily know that I have any resolutions or stories or anything around that, but definitely curious and investigating. And it's so fun when my kids will say things like, well, I don't know, because I have one that is refusing to do his US history homework right now in a study hall class. And he's like, well, I don't believe in America. And I was like, that's okay. You don't have to believe in America. You still have to do your homework. So you can believe whatever you want to believe. That's perfectly acceptable. But still do your homework. And question your homework. Question the assignments. Question the things that have been put in front of you. Absolutely fine, but still turn in your homework.
Yeah, that's a big one because you went through all these grieving processes and it changed your view of many things, including your childhood and I don't know what else, right? And so I think it's good to know that that's the way things happen with history as well, even oral history, written history, whatever there is, your views about it change. From not only your family, your social family, your biological family, something many times it's the same family, but it doesn't matter, through the community you're in, and then through your traveling. You said you traveled to Germany, you got to see a different perspective and this and that. All of that changes the way you actually would read a history book.
Yeah, very much so. And because it's a perspective, it actually changes the way you read a lot of books. Because of it's a perspective. It's the way that person sees the world and not necessarily the way you see the world. And it's good to have those insights. It's good to look at things from other people's perspective and their experiences. I think we can learn a lot from each other if we do that more. But also forming our own opinions about it and not just accepting things as they are, have been or have been presented, but also reflecting, is this true? Is this true for me? Is this how I see the world, or do I see things from a different perspective? And the ability to agree to disagree, that just because you see things from a different way of somebody else doesn't mean you need to be argumentative about it. You can express your thoughts, and that's okay. But accepting that that other person has a different perspective, and that perspective is okay too. So I feel like experiences and travels and all of that has given me this way of, if somebody presents something that's different from the way I see it, I'm able to go, oh, that's interesting. Let's get curious about that. I wonder why. Instead of saying, well, that's wrong, as so many people would do.
Yeah, and there's a deeper level of that is spoken of in A Course in Miracles as well. Is that it speaks of there's two voices. One is not real, but it still is something we experience as if it were, which is called the ego, and is always doing everything to separate, to make things feel separate, to make you feel angry, to feel alone, or to feel better than someone else or whatever, right? And it's always against feeling joined. And then there's the Holy Spirit, which is the real voice, that it's actually the one, and that's one that always is one that leads to more peace, joy, and happiness and well-being. So I think that's another perspective. It goes deeper than the question of right or wrong. It's about what is it doing for me, the perspective that I have.
Yeah, and that's something that I try and talk to my kids about and talk to clients about as well that come to my yoga class. Like when you think about, when you look at your thoughts and you look at the things going through your head, evaluate where those are coming from, what those are. Lean into, is this really true for me? Or is this the lizard brain, the monkey mind has shifted, is some sort of a protection because of either something that's happened to me or something in my history, my ancestry that has happened to me? Or is it really true for me? Or is it just this protection, so-called protection, from some abstract something that doesn't even exist anymore?
Yeah, it's very important to, is my, the way I'm seeing the world helping me to open up, or is it leading me to shut down more, right? To get, so shutting down can be depressive, it can be anger, it can, has many different aspects to it. And but the, what you were saying, bringing these things to light, bringing it to your awareness, can, is a way to open up, right? Even though these emotions are coming up, there's anger and so on, but it becomes productive and helpful because you're bringing it to your awareness rather than shutting down around it and making it become even more pronounced.
Yeah, one of the things that has really changed within me is that when I feel that contraction with something, instead of dismissing it, I get curious and think and look at, well, what's there? What's going on? What is there something actually there for me? When I didn't come up with the idea to do grief yoga on my own, a friend of mine actually suggested it. She said, "Hey, Paige, you need to do this." And my immediate response was, "No, absolutely not." And as I've learned and as I've grown, when I have that hard no, I go, "Okay, wait a minute." Okay, what's really there? What's really behind that? Is there really a yes and we're just afraid? Is it really a no and it's a hard no? Or is there something else for me? And the more I leaned into that no, the more I learned it was fear. It was fear that I wasn't good enough. It was fear that I didn't know what I was talking about. It was fear that, and as I listened to the fears, they began to dissipate and go away. And the answer was, yes, you have to do this. And so here we are.
Yeah, that's really powerful. This learning to that, those feelings that previously you would have interpreted as harmful, become helpful because you're willing to be with it, right? And I think that's the same thing with your perspectives. You are able to allow other perspectives to be there that previously you would have interpreted as only harmful. And then through this allowing it to be visible, to be there, you can benefit from it rather than shut up and go deeper into separation, which you can't really do, but you can experience it as if you could.
Getting curious allows you to go deeper with connection. And not just connection with yourself, but also connection with the world around you, connection with history, connection with family, connection with community. So the more you are able to lean into that which is uncomfortable, lean into that which might be a no, get curious about what's really there, what's behind it, and peel back those layers, the more connected with everything you become. And isn't that what we crave more than anything else? It's not that isolation, like society would have us believe. It's that connectedness and that interconnectedness with ourselves and with the world around us.
Yeah, there's this beauty in the realization that we are one, we are not separate. That is only becomes visible through this decision to want to open up, right?
Yes, you absolutely have to decide that you're going to open up. You have to decide to get curious. And the more you investigate that, and the more you open up to it, the more life opens up to you as well, in a really beautiful way. The more you feel all of the things, all of the feelings, all of the experiences, the more present, the more connected you become, the more present you become in that moment, the more you're able to experience life in a bigger, fuller, not just going through the motions kind of way. And that's where the beauty of truly living is.
Yeah, in A Course in Miracles, it says there is no death. So in truth, we are, life is all there is. What do you think about that?
I think there is a physical death, but there is no spiritual death. No, that we are constant and there and present and in whatever form. Now, this physical body at some point will go away, but our essence, our spirit, no, it's always, there is no death there. It just leaves and goes somewhere else.
Yeah, there's this quote from A Course in Miracles. It says, I am not a body, I am free. I am just as God created me.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah, and we are not, and we're so concerned with looking younger and not dying that we forget that we're a soul, that we're a spirit, and nothing ever happens to the spirit, that it is always around and it is always there.
Yeah, that's the message that I think we'll leave it with. So let's start wrapping up. Is there anything I didn't ask you that you would like to share about before we completely wrap up and then?
I don't think so. I do in-person and virtual classes. So if someone is interested and wants to connect with me, happy to do that. But yeah, no, I don't think there's anything else. And I know my information will be in the show notes and as well. So if you want to connect, you can find me all of the places.
Perfect. So does anyone have a last comment or question or something to share now? Okay, then I would like to thank you once again, Paige, for joining us here, for being willing to share and go very deep in a topic that is something that every one of us deals with in a different way, but we do face it. And it's something we have faced or will face or have faced in little ways or in larger ways or in whatever, or more obvious ways or less obvious ways. But it's an experience we all go through. So thank you for sharing about this and being willing to, let other people know what your experience is with grief and the things you've gained from that. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here.
So I would like to thank all our listeners, participants. I would like to thank you all. And if you want to participate and join us live, that is possible. Just have to go to the podcast's Telegram channel. And we have these recordings every week at 8:30 to 10 p.m. Central European time. Okay, thank you so much for listening. Please review the podcast, subscribe, and enjoy, and please share the word. Thank you so much. Bye-bye, until next time.